They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, we're talking today to one of my favorite people, and that's Bill Davis, and we're going to talk about something that seems to be going on everywhere across the country right now, or most states across the country, and that's legislation. Bill, things have not been working for HOAs or in HOAs for homeowners for years and years and years, and we keep tinkering around the edges, trying to fix the problems. And as you and I have noted before, it doesn't work. But we're still doing it, right?
Right. More wasted time and effort.
So, you know, we've got legislation here that's sort of going through the process, but in some states it's actually passed. And it's been, you know, it's been signed and it's been approved and it's just in the hopper waiting to become law and for the law to take effect. And have they made any changes? Have they made any headway?
Not that I'm aware of. They tend to, more often than not, they tend to, what's the word I'm looking for, gel things that were questionable before, you know, the industry lobbyists get in there and all of a sudden this idea about fining, why are these private corporations fining? All of a sudden you'll see a statute that infers that fining is perfectly appropriate. You know, there's never been any discussion about, at least in many states, as to the propriety of these places fining to begin with. And all of a sudden there's legislation that talks about how you add the fine in or how you apply payments to fines and things like this. It's like, what? Where did this come from?
Well, you know, in Virginia, you've got the original lawsuit, Gilman, that
right.
said fining was unconstitutional. So what they're saying now is that it's constitutionally permissible for you to give up your constitutional rights. And
yeah.
So, you know, by buying into one of these nonsense developments that includes fines, then you're good to go. Because you agreed, right?
Yeah, pretty absurd.
So how do we argue that one? I mean, where do we go with that?
Well, I mean, you could try the legislature, but you know, something like that's going to have to take, it's really going to have to take a litigation lawsuit because, you know, if you question the propriety or the constitutionality of fining, then, and if it's put into a statute, then you're going to have to challenge the statute.
Well, you know, in Rhode Island, they did.
Yes.
In the Foley case, they did. They said the statute was unconstitutional because the legislature was giving them powers that, you know, the legislature itself didn't have. And the fact that you had the legislature enacting laws, the legislature finding you in violation of those laws, and the legislature imposing a fine is unconstitutional, then they don't have the authority to do that. So why are they giving HOAs that power?
It isn't the homeowners that are asking for that. It's the trade groups that are asking for that. I mean, you know, you don't have to worry about court if you can just intimidate somebody with fines, which don't cost you a dime, bring revenue, and you can contract to get a percentage of. It's all about the money.
Is it all about creating conflict so that the industry, so the lobbyists, so that their buds make a whole lot of money on this?
Absolutely.
So there's a conflict of interest.
You mean for the industry people? Of course.
They're yes.
They don't represent the homeowners in these things. They clearly represent themselves, and they're constantly before the legislature claiming that their clients are, you know, the homeowners, which is completely bogus. Well, or they'll say the association, and then they'll create ambiguity as to what that word means. But it isn't the homeowners.
So, all right. So it's, you know, I keep saying this. There's more of us than there are of them. How do we fight it? Short of going to court, how do we fight it? Because there isn't a Bill Davis in every state. I think I would put my faith in you to fight this and win.
Well, the problem is something like that, it takes a long time going to the courts because you're going to meet, you know, you're going to have the trial court, and then you have to go to the appellate court. And then whoever loses is certainly going to appeal to the state's Supreme Court, and these things often take many years. And so legislation can be faster and more certain, and there's certainly a lot more homeowners, but when they go to the legislature, they need to be better organized. All too often, yes, they have, you know, as one of the bills we're going to talk about refers to anecdotal evidence, that's putting it, you know, that's almost a euphemism. It's pretty horrendous stuff that's going on out there. And when they go to try to tell their tale, it often gets, you know, when you only have 3 minutes typically to present something, it's hard to address some of this stuff in 3 minutes. You have to get behind the public hearings just like their lobbyists do. You have to go meet with the legislators or their staff. It's a concerted effort. It really takes more than one person.
It takes more than one person, but you want the argument. You want to be able to make the argument, and you want to make sure that the argument sticks. So you can go in and it becomes, you know, you're going to have the lobbyists with all their money. That's their living. That's their career. That's they do what they do 24/7. And then you've got the homeowner who can be a brain surgeon, who can be a rocket scientist, who can be an attorney, who can be a bus driver, who can be a garbage man. It doesn't matter. But they've got other careers. They've got other means of making an income. And now you're
right.
Asking them to become experts in a field. They go in, they ask for stuff that is really horrendous. And CAI comes along and says, oh, you know, let us help you. And they go, oh, okay, thank you, because we don't know what we're doing. And before you know it, they've given away the farm. That one of those statutes talks about educating the homeowners.
Well, that's kind of a joke, isn't it?
Who's going to do the educating, and why do homeowners need to be educated?
Well, my concern with many of these legislative solutions, it's really an industry freebie for what you call regulatory capture of a regulator, where it's essentially the quote regulator is essentially run by the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these ombudsman statutes, they're completely susceptible to that. And of course, they talk about training, and who's going to be the vendor for training, or who's going to lobby for that. It's just another way of feeding money to this industry group. There's no independent research done by the ombudsman. There's no, you know, they just turn to these industry sources and accept them as truth when they're really nothing but marketing propaganda. Did you want to talk about some of those acts?
Yeah, please. Go for it.
Well, I'm gonna pick on one a little bit because this is an Illinois act. It's House Bill 4204 in Illinois, and I'm gonna pick on it a little bit because our good friend Evan McKenzie is the author, and you ever see those commercials on TV about different prescriptions? I'm gonna say in the fine print, I'm not a licensed attorney in Illinois, but I can still read, as can anybody else. He wants to look at the bill, but I'd like to. And to be fair, you know, writing ones, it's easier to look in hindsight and pick at things a little bit than it is to, you know, the effort to initiate one to begin with when you're talking about a larger body of statutory work. But this is supposed to be an ombudsman position creation in Illinois to handle disputes. In the HOA and condo land. But do you have a copy of this act before you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, you see Section 10 where it talks about all these findings, that it's a complex responsibility. Managing them is a complex responsibility. And these people don't have any experience operating not-for-profit associations or corporations or complying with laws or interpreting and enforcing restrictions and rules imposed by applicable instruments or covenants. Unit owners may not fully understand their rights and obligations under the law, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, the way most of these things are written, the unit owner has zero rights. It's all about what the unit owner isn't permitted to do and what the association or the corporation will do against the unit owner. It's very rarely are there any rights for the quote unit owner. I prefer to think of myself as a homeowner as opposed to unit owner. This is kind of like commoditization, and you're all lemmings and just follow the, you're just another commodity here for the mass. But what's interesting about this is concerns about industry getting regulatory capture. An office like this, why don't they mandate that homeowners, before you can purchase property that's an HOA or a condominium, that you have to undergo training or an educational class before you buy? Why isn't that, they don't want people to do that. They want, once you're trapped in there, then they want to educate you about, you know, how you need to pay, and be subject to, management companies, HOA attorneys, and board members. That's my concern about something like this. I think, considering that so much of these are financed, essentially federally backed financing, because you have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that do a huge percentage. They basically represent the secondary market for buying all these loans. I think the federal government and all the main lenders are going to try to comply with Fannie and Freddie. Or actually now FHFA, since that's the entity that Fannie and Freddie are, that's the receiver that's got receivership over them, mandate that you have to go through counseling or class before you can get a loan to purchase these properties. They do that with reverse mortgages. Why can't they do that with regular mortgages when it involves HOA property? Especially since we're now seeing these cases that really hadn't been the law before, where the HOA can foreclose on the first mortgagee's loan. Now, there's been a number of those cases that have come out, and that's fairly new. So why can't the federal government mandate that you have to, if you're going to borrow money through one of these programs or from a national bank, then you're going to have to go through a class, and that class should warn you that they can foreclose and do all these bad things to you.
You talk about unit versus a homeowner. I like to use the word unit because you don't have a home if there's an HOA attached. That's a non-starter, for instance. A home is where you are king of the castle. A home is yours. In an HOA, it's not yours. You don't, I mean, for God's sakes, you can't even decide what you put on your front door or whether you have a hose in the front yard that's without getting approval, or somebody's going to check and see if your flower pot's cracked, and somebody's going to decide whether or not you can have Christmas lights on, and if you can, what day you can put them up and what day you have to take them down, whether they can be blue, white, yellow, green, multicolored, whatever it is. In a home, it doesn't work that way. In a home, it's yours. A home is personal.
Yeah.
There's nothing personal in a unit. A unit, you're just part of something else. And I want people to understand, again, you and I have been talking a lot about using the proper terminology. You don't live in a home. You live in a unit.
Right. Well, speaking of terminology,
yes.
The next sentence says, this act seeks to educate unit owners, condominium associations. Now, wait a minute. That's a corporate entity. How are you going to a corporate entity? That's silly, okay? Forgive me, Evan. I'm having some fun here. Okay, look at the next one, the common interest community associations. Again, I think that one of the problems here is this blurring of what are you talking about? Because they're certainly not talking about the people there, and the corporate entity isn't going to get, quote, educated. It operates through agents. But while we're on that note, and we're going to come back to this, you want to flip to page 3 and look at the definition of a common interest community. Now, remember, this is the definition of common interest community. When we hear that word a lot in these places, the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not.
Right. What do you see as the definition of a common interest community?
It has the meaning ascribed to it in section 1 through 5.
No. The common interest community.
Oh, that's
right above that.
Common interest, where is that? On page. Common interest community, selection 2 of the common condominium property department means the Department of Financial. I don't know. Why don't you read it to us?
Okay, I'm sorry. It's in section 15 of the Act, and in my copy, it's on page 3, roughly line 4. Common interest community means a property.
Okay, I'm with it.
A property governed by the Common Interest Community Association Act. Now, wait a minute. A property. I thought communities were supposed to be people, property. So now the property is the community, not the homeowners, the property. And how are you going to educate property? But anyway, but going back to the legislative findings, it says effective education can prevent or reduce the severity of problems within a condominium or common interest community. Well, that sounds, unicorns and rainbow bits and all this other type of thing. It's kind of silly. It's sort of like claiming education about water conservation is going to help people cut down on water. It really doesn't if you have a municipality or an HOA that mandates to irrigate under threat of fine or foreclosure on your home. How is this education is just another way to feed money from the homeowners over to the vendors that provide the quote education. So I don't really agree with the legislative findings. It sounds happy.
Well, I got to tell you, the only association that I know of that's out, the only development I know of, the only community I know of that's happy is Old Bellhaven, which is where the Ferrans are. And the reason, and the reason they're so happy and everybody gets along and they're having these Christmas parties and they're having, is because they gutted the powers of the association. The association is there to collect the money and mow the 1 acre bit of grass. That's it.
Right, they got rid of it.
They got rid of it. And the property values went up because people were now allowed to start fixing up their homes and adding things like decks and new roofs and, all of these things, and the values went up. So how can educating people fix something like that? I think the only way to fix it is to gut the powers.
Kill it. That's right.
Come on, we're going around and around and around, and every time we do this, we just add more junk to the associations, give them more powers, give them more authority, give them more credibility. The only way to get there is to gut their powers.
Yep, or terminate them. You can't really do that with a condo, fortunately, but I think many times these HOAs, you really can either get rid of them entirely or get rid of their authority. And frankly, under the Supreme Court standards for associational standing, most of these things wouldn't have standing to file lawsuits. You're going to find this stuff in, especially since they're going against their own members. That seems to be their primary function, is terrorizing and harming the people that live in the subdivision that they're supposedly taking care of. That's one of the, that's one of those sticks that you're supposed to have to be able to have associational standing. And if you're ripping apart your own members, that generally indicates that, no, you don't have standing. So there, I think even more fundamentally, standing of these things, filing lawsuits a lot of times is one of the things that should be challenged. But let's go on to 25, and note when this education and training is going to start.
I think I saw that July 1, 2016.
2018. I think the effective date is 2016. It's 2018 is when they're going to start offering training.
2018. Oh, nice.
So you can start getting trained in 2018. Okay.
Until then, you can breathe.
Right. Now, here's one of the biggies. It's commonly a problem in many states. And this is in Section 35 of the bill. And it requires the HOA, the community corporation, this collection of buildings, I guess, to develop a written policy for resolving complaints. Shu, how many times? Let's look at some of the things in here. A description of the process. This written in policy has to have a sample form on which a unit owner may make a complaint to the association. 2, a description of the process by which complaints shall be delivered to the association. I really hate that word association. I think it's a marketing gimmick. They need to stop using that word. But
gulag.
Yeah, gulag or community corporation or something like that, but not the association is intentionally misleading. But this description of the process by which complaints shall be delivered to the association. Okay, well, and we've talked about Marjorie's work in California about how the industry tried to they have a similar thing there about dispute resolution. And how the industry tried to tackle on all these complicated processes for how you had to deliver or tender a complaint to the employee. It was designed to make it absurd, expensive, and the reason they did that is to say, hey, you didn't comply with those notice requirements, therefore you failed to meet a condition precedent, therefore your dispute is moot until you comply with all this stuff. Now, that's more applicable if you're dealing with an ombudsman that actually has some power. But let's look and see what kind of power this ombudsman. That's in Section E of that same part that we were looking at. A unit owner may not bring a request for assistance. Oh, I'm sorry. If the HOA refuses to adopt a policy, you can't seek the ombudsman's assistance for that. All you can do is report them. So that's one of the things you can't get help from the ombudsman for, is for the HOA to actually adopt a written dispute policy. When is the first time a homeowner can actually file a complaint with or seek help from the ombudsman? Did you see that in there? It's in Section 40 of the bill, roughly page 8 on my copy.
Page 8, and it's Section 10, 40, beginning.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, beginning on July 1, 2019.
Yeah, so this is 2015, so you're talking 4.5 years from now is when you can first seek assistance from the ombudsman.
You know, we have an ombudsman, and a lot of people say, you're so lucky you've got an ombudsman. I had Pia Trigiani in here, and she was talking about the creation of the ombudsman. By the way, I actually went down to Richmond and lobbied against it because... Yeah. And I did it with a non-sequitur cartoon. And the cartoon was this little guy who obviously had trudged through the desert carrying a gas can, so he'd obviously run out of gas. He gets to an oasis, and there's this information booth with this little old lady there. And she says, she looks at him, and she says, "All I'm allowed to tell you is that you're screwed." So I put, this is the proposed Virginia ombudsman. Because the ombudsman is not allowed to do anything. The ombudsman is there just as window dressing because they want people to think that there's someone there.
Right.
And when Pia was here, she says, well, she says, if anybody calls and they can say, hey, I got some proxies in the mail. What do I do with it? And I said, with all due respect, nobody has ever called me and asked me what the hell to do with proxies. I would gladly tell them what to do with their proxies. But I said they usually call because they're being fined, because they're being harassed, because they're at risk of losing their homes, because they're, you know, people are doing this, that, and the other to them. And I said, and will the ombudsman be able to help? Oh, well, no, we can't do that. So why? Why have one? It's just taking money, and you have to pay. And I couldn't see if there was, I sort of scanned this. I don't know if there's a fee to register your association, but there's a fine if you don't.
Right.
You know what? What is that?
Well, and there's no real penalties if you, I think we'll get to that section too. There's not really any penalties against the HOA if it fails to comply with the state law, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? Oh, if this is all about rules enforcement and fining homeowners, why isn't there ever any, penalty for the HOA which fails not to comply with contract, but actually fail to comply with the law? One of the things, these written dispute policies, you've seen them, I've seen them, and I know the stuff we've seen out in California recently is trying to address some of these really unscrupulous activities by the vendors, but now you have a mandate to create a policy, and you know what happens a lot of times is the HOA will take, or the vendors will take the position, you're an involuntary member, and we get to adopt these rules, and you have to follow them. And then so all of a sudden it'll be things like paying money for dispute resolution or paying the, they'll they'll end up with a insurance premium. They'll get insurance for the HOA, and, of course, the homeowner doesn't get any. I'm talking about for defending against these lawsuits. And they'll try to mandate that before filing suit as part of the dispute resolution policy, the homeowner has to pay the association's deductible, you know, which is another bunch of nonsense because the homeowner never agreed to any such thing. This is part of the nonsense of involuntary membership. Another one that they'll try to do is force the homeowner into arbitration when the homeowner isn't interested in going into arbitration. It'll be essentially at the discretion of the HOA and not of the homeowner. I mean, they've got all sorts of schemes. Arizona is where I saw the trying to force the homeowners to pay the HOA's insurance deductible. And, of course, that was used for two things. One was to create a barrier to homeowners ever bringing a dispute and even having to litigate about whether you could bring a dispute if you hadn't paid the HOA's insurance deductible. A bunch of nonsense, which, you know, you never agreed to. But let's keep going in another part. So the first time you can bring – you can make a request for assistance is July the 1st of 2019. And
so in the meantime, you're screwed, right?
Right. I'm skipping ahead here a little bit, but the only thing that this ombudsman offers, looking at my copy, it's page 10. This is in section G. This is in part G of section 44. And it says, on receipt of a unit owner's request for assistance that the department determines meets the requirements of this section, which, by the way, has all these things you're supposed to provide, and it's only available apparently to owners. So think about this. People that rent have a property interest as well. And but somehow this is only available to owners. So anybody that's, yeah, so anyone who's not an owner can't file a complaint. It says, so when you receive the owner's request for assistance, the ombudsman shall, within the time limits of the available and the available resources, now think about that.
And the available resources?
Yeah. Confer with the interested parties and assist in efforts to resolve the dispute by mutual agreement of the parties. Okay, and the very next section says the ombudsman shall assist only opposing parties who mutually agree to participate in dispute resolution. So the HOA can actually say, hey, adopt a dispute policy that says you have to file an application with the ombudsman before you can file a lawsuit or pull some silly thing like that. And then you have to argue that you never agreed to that. You know, that's the entity's rules. But, you know, just putting you through these kind of
hoops
under the auspices of dispute resolution. I mean, we've seen these things. I mean, you know, it's not like this is new. They tried doing this in Colorado. They tried doing stuff like this in Arizona. They tried doing it in California. And fortunately, there's a homeowner group out there. By that, I mean a group that actively seeks legislation to benefit the homeowners as opposed to the industry. And they were successful in curbing a lot of that stuff. Now here's another huge problem I have with this bill. Section 45, confidentiality. All information collected by the department in the course of addressing a request for assistance shall be maintained for the confidential use of the department and shall not be disclosed. And not, you can't even get copies of it, apparently, pursuant to an Illinois Freedom of Information Act request. They have, just like the Federal Freedom of Information Act, Illinois has its own Freedom of Information Act, similar to the Texas Public Information Act. Now, that's one of the problems, right? You want to know if you're another homeowner, how many times your HOA, how many complaints have been filed against it. Heck, not only if you're an owner, what about if you're a prospective purchaser? Okay, why is this such a big secret if these are such great places? So wouldn't you want to know that information? I mean, if it's available and out there, and why does it have to be covered up?
I think it should be available. I think it should be out there so that you, Because you know why they want to cover it up? First of all, they're using homeowner money, and they don't want you to know how much of your money is going to cover up their blunders and their stupidity. Right. And number two, because the attorneys, the CAI attorneys are always involved in this, and what happens if you go and say, look, you've already lost a case that's exactly identical to this?
Yeah.
You don't have that to say, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. You've already lost this case. Hear the details.
Right. Or this issue's already come up 20 times before, you know.
Yeah.
Or if you're trying to show arbitrary and capricious behavior by the HOA, well, you need to show how it's behaved with respect to other property owners, and, you know, you need access to that. To that information. But when I look at this whole bill in the entirety, to me, it seems that all this other stuff is fluff, and at best, this is a one-time shot at trying to collect up information on the number of HOAs and what kinds there are, how big they are, and some things like that. Because the first report that this agency has to make is set forth in Section 50, and it has to make a report on October the 1st of 2020. That's approaching...
Oh, yeah.
6 years from now. Wait, 2020, this is 2015. It's approaching 6 years because we're just now in February.
Yeah.
That's 6 years from now. They do have to register. That's near the very end, Section 55.
Is there a registration fee? I don't remember seeing that.
I didn't see one. It just says they have to register in a form and manner specified by the department. So I suppose the department's manner could say, hey, you got to pay $50.
But you know what? If you go to page 14, G, which is on line 15.
Oh yeah.
It says if an association fails to initially register as provided in subsection A of this section, or fails to timely renew its registration, the department may impose a late charge or late fee against the association.
Right.
You know, so they've got these penalties built into this. You'd better do as you're told or else.
Right.
What I do like is that it goes on to say if you don't, the association is then ineligible to impose or enforce a lien for common expenses or to pursue any action. So maybe there's a positive there.
Except here's the problem I have with it. Guess what? How do you know if the HOA registered if the department doesn't have to disclose that information?
Oh, that's a point. That's a very good point.
I mean, this is. I do respect Evan, and I'm picking on the bill, you know, because we're having some fun here today, and we're. I think this is really a state data collection thing because to me it honestly doesn't offer anything for the homeowner.
No.
This is a let's look at something else here. It says that the lien for common expenses previously filed during a period in which the HOA, I would call it the HOA, was registered shall not be extinguished by a lapse, okay, nor shall the common expense debt reflected by the lien or court action be deemed invalid. But any pending enforcement proceedings related to the lien shall be suspended and any applicable time limit is told. Now, think about that. There's the statute of limitations. What they're talking about is tolling the statute of limitations for the HOA's own bad conduct. Why? That's not an appropriate remedy. The HOA should lose it. And, in fact, if it doesn't act within a particular time period, remember, they're suing somebody who puts up an affirmative defense of statute of limitations or says you're not, you don't have the capacity because you're not registered as you're supposed to be under the act. Okay, well, that homeowner just has to sit there until the HOA decides it's eventually going to register at its own luxury, and the homeowner has to put them on notice of their failure to register. And how does the homeowner know about it if the homeowner can't collect registration information? I mean, it's
and this passed.
Yeah, I don't see how it's really helpful. Now let's look down at Section 70 on page 15.
Okay. is repealed on July 1, 2021.
Okay, so there's a 2-year window for a homeowner to file a complaint, and I assume if it's repealed on that date, I don't know what happens to pending actions by the ombudsman, but it only works for things that the parties mutually agree to, and the HOA can simply take the position we're never going to agree to any action with the ombudsman, period, you know, right off the bat. But, okay, you got a 2-year window that starts in 2019, which is 4.5 years from now. You got a 2-year window to try to get some help from an ombudsman who I question whether they're going to be somebody, you know, that's controlled by the industry to begin with, given the way this thing is set up.
It's repealed, but you know what? You're going to have this group of people who are now feeding at the homeowner trough again, another layer of people, and they're not going to go away. So something, they're going to get rolled into some other, I'm pretty sure, some other government position.
Well, or you may have another legislative session that will have a very vague reference to the such and such is amended as follows. And it'll simply say repeal part, what is that? It'll say repeal section 70 of, bill, I don't know what it'll be called by then, but something law, HB 2404. So you'll just have this.
The Homeowner Protection Bill, right?
yeah, the Homeowner Protection Bill. The Unit Owner Protection Bill. So I question where all these I mean, to me, this looks kind of like a way of funneling more money to, you know, the alleged educational group, Community Associations Institute, which we all know that calling them an educational group is really shameful. But, you know, it looks like a way of shoveling more money, because who's going to provide this education that's coming from the ombudsman's office? And I really, apparently, the ombudsman isn't even going to be aware that unit owners don't really have any rights. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm picking on it today. I'm not a Illinois licensed attorney. Maybe someone else would read it differently. But I mean, you know, it's I understand the English language, and I've never thought of a community as consisting of property.
That's true. Let's section 999 effective date. Oh my God! All right. Let's look at what Marjorie Murray's done with the California Homeowner Law Center, the Cal Law Center in California. Yeah. Now, one of the things that we hear about typically, Bill, is that if you go before, a kangaroo court and associations, or if you go to small claims court, because God help us, everybody seems to be dragging everybody else into court these days of some kind, whether it's a kangaroo court, a real court, or a small claims court. In California, HOAs typically don't want you to come in with anybody. If you're going in, they want you to go in on your own.
Yeah.
And I know we had some kangaroo court in my association a number of years ago, and they didn't want anyone in there. And we had one hearing. That's all it took was one hearing. And we insisted that it was the homeowner's right to decide whether or not they wanted an open session or if they wanted a closed session. So you had, you know, we won that one. And we told the homeowner, and I tell every homeowner that contacts me, don't go in alone. There's strength in numbers. Drag people in. Well, I don't know anyone. I don't care. Stand in the middle of the road, stop traffic, drag people out of their cars and take them in with you. Just make sure there are more people on your side of the table than the other side because it's a game of intimidation.
Well, I think it should be the homeowner's option to force the entire process to be, and I think maybe you were saying this, to be open to anybody that comes in. These board members can't, you know, for many years, board members often didn't even know. This was all being done behind the scenes by the HOA manager and the HOA attorney under the pretext of doing this on behalf of the board. And we had in Texas, there in 2011, the legislation required that before they could impose a fine, file a lawsuit to enforce restricted covenants, or to collect assessments, they had to have an open board meeting, and they had to notice the owners of a board meeting at which one of those things would be considered or voted upon against an owner. Okay, well, of course, many of them are not complying with that. And I saw continuing legal education. I was kind of watching what the other side was doing from afar. I watched it on the web web-provided continuing legal education. And the industry guys were actually proposing, oh, just adopt a standing resolution that the board can discuss and act upon legal matters, pending legal matters, fines, foreclosures, and things like that. Now, that is not a notice to the owner that there's a lawsuit that's going to be about to be filed against them, or that somebody's going to try to fine them or do something like that. You would have no idea that you've been targeted for something like that with a notice. And that's the whole point. They're constantly looking for ways to circumvent and keep all this in the dark and away from the homeowners, especially the owner that is not just the owner that's a target, but also all the other owners in the subdivision. You know, I mean, it's pretty disgusting.
It is pretty disgusting. And I think, you know, it is a form of intimidation when you go in and you're facing, in our case, it was a 9-member board, plus you. So you have this kangaroo court that's just made up of, I was on the board at the time, and both Frank and I were on the board, and we refused to sit on that side of the table. We sat with the homeowners, which give them the warm and fuzzies. But the thing was, there were a lot more people sitting on our side, on the homeowner's side of the table, than there were of board members. And that sort of prevented them from getting out of control. That prevented them. And what ended up happening was there was an amicable resolution. And there was no intimidation. The only intimidation was that we had more people on our side, and they did not like having to sit there facing facing a bunch of. I mean, it's psychological warfare,
sure.
Right? So apparently, the industry in California want, because now it is allowed for you to take in someone with you. It could be a spouse. I can't imagine not allowing a spouse in there. A spouse, someone from fair housing, an attorney, a mediator, anybody with them, so that you're not going in alone, so you have some form of support. Well, the industry wanted no
witness.
Huh?
Not to mention another witness.
Yeah, heaven forbid. They wanted to give notice that if they were going to bring anyone, hey, I'm going to bring someone in with me. Assume you're going to have someone, nitwits. And they wanted anything said in the session to remain confidential. And, wait a minute, why do we have all this confidentiality?
To protect the vendors. It isn't for the homeowners.
Why do we have all this confidentiality? Homeowners don't go along with that. Because quite often they'll have these gag orders. And if you dare talk about this, then we are going to take every penny we gave you back.
Right. Yeah. Or we're going to, the settlement is null and void, and
and you agree up front that you forfeit all this type of stuff. Yeah, I know. I know. It looks like, I mean, Marjorie's dealing with those specific issues out there. I mean, the industry is not, they come up with new ways to scam people, but then they mimic that in state after state after state. So in that way, they're not that original. They're very repetitious, and you can predict what they're going to do. It's just a question of which state is next or where they're going to do something first.
If they try to make it so that the homeowner can't bring anything with them in one state, they're going to try and expand that to many other states.
Well, they do a lot of that through the Gikiowa, the Uniform Community Association Institute.
Common Interest Ownership Act, yeah.
That's the one. And they... they'll go in and they'll say, oh, well, you know, state A adopted this. It's working really, really, really well. And so the legislature's, oh, okay. So, I mean, we're not breaking new ground. This is already being used. So that's how they get a lot of this stuff passed. And the homeowners have got to stop accepting all of this. Going, oh, well, you know, you got to, this club... Guys, it's not going to work. I don't care what you do to it. You can tweak it. You can massage it. You can send it love letters. You can stand it on its head. It's a concept that is doomed to fail. It is not going to work. Accept it. Grow up. It's not going to work.
I don't know if this could be used as a study in the psychology. I really hope Dr. Solomon does some more studying. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people that could give him subjects to look at, but I have a case right now where this woman who used to be a board member literally tried to extort, to use the HOA to sue people when she was on the board, and then tried to extort concessions from them personally for herself and her comrades on the board. And one of the things that she tried to extort from an entity that owned a bunch of property was she wanted lifetime fully transferable golf club memberships for her and her husband, as well as the employee of the HOA she controlled and four of the other board members. Now, there's a total of 9 board members, so there was only roughly, there were 6 of them that were in on it. And, her husband, the latest thing a woman has done is you're only allowed a certain number of terms, so she was constantly trying to amend the bylaws to change that. Most recently, she ran for office. There were three board positions available. This is kind of an at-large type of deal. There's many different sections in the subdivision. There were 3 board positions up and 4 people running for it. So only one person's going to lose. Well, on December the 30th, she hired an attorney to file suit to stop the HOA from having an election or counting ballots or anything like that. And the judge prohibited the HOA from seating the board members until this was carried out a little further. But what happened was the ballots were counted several different ways. And she lost. She had something like 119 votes. The next closest board member, or next closest candidate had 600 and something
wow.
votes, and it ranged from roughly 600 up to a little over 700 for the other 3 candidates. If you counted it a different way, she had, well, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is she lost by, you know, it's approaching
a landslide.
It really is, and approaching an order of magnitude, and she's still suing. Her way of counting votes is remember the law here was that the board could decide if you were in good standing or not and then decide whether your vote counted. And one of the things that they did was, of course, ignore people's votes. Another thing that they did is simply not send out ballots to people they knew weren't going to vote for them and, you know, engaging in all this type of stuff. But the only way that's going to make her happy is if only votes for her were allowed. You know, that's the kind of mentality of these people that want the HOAs. They want the HOA, and they want to be in control over it. That's That's what's sick of the, about these things, and that's why they're never going to work, because those people eventually do get in control at some point, and then everything goes downhill for the benefit of the HOA attorneys and the HOA vendors. It's, you know, it's a mess. But he had, you know, these probably people that enjoyed picking wings off of insects when they were little kids, or I don't know, you know. I mean, really, I don't know what the deal is, but they have to make themselves relevant in other people's lives. You know, stop what you're doing, look at me, I can hurt you. That's the way they behave. And it's something else.
Kids pulling the wings off insects. I'll have to be watching kids from now on and say, oh, no, you're not growing up to be an HOA board member.
Yeah, they were one of those kids. And what kind of education do you think is going to change? I don't think anything short of, you know, being put in rehab in a mental health hospital or something like that is going to cure these people. They're not... This is their human behavior, and there's really no protection against it. And it doesn't do any good to educate the other homeowners when you've got people like that. It's certainly not going to do any good to educate that person. None of this is going to change behavior. And what you have to do is remove the platform that allows them to prey upon other people. That's what you have to do. And as long as that HOA is there, it gives them that platform. And that's why you and I know that they're never going to work, because they do not have – you can't give them governmental powers without providing the
– chains of the people. Constitution, which is what – that's why you've got the Constitution. They're chains to prevent the government from going overboard. And what right. you've got is another layer of government without the chains of Constitution, without the boundaries, if you will.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of stuck with that. Bill, you are one of the most awesome, amazing people I know.
Well, thanks, you. I don't know about that, but you know, I'd certainly like to see more attention paid to this issue, because it affects so many people across the United States. And it's deeply integrated even with the entire economy of the United States. How much of the United States economy is based upon housing and the financial industry? The meltdown was all about mortgages, right?
Yeah.
And misrepresentations in the sale of packages of loans. Well, the same thing's going on. There was misrepresentations in the sales of the housing that those loans were used to acquire. Why aren't they regulating that better? You know, and how many of those loans were tied to HOA houses? I think that would be an interesting one to.
Well, if you look at the sheer number of HOA housing that keeps growing exponentially, and you look at the fact that the industry's boasting because it's a $65 billion annual industry, that's not part of the mortgage or insurance or anything else. That's just being controlled by someone else.
Yeah.
And that's $65 billion. Come on, guys. What are you wasting your money on?
Yeah.
Bill.
Well, it's not consumer demand. It's local government mandate and even federal government mandate. And, we're supposed to have freedom of association, not as well. That also means freedom from association, and it's come down to which association are you forced to be a member of. And it's just not – it's completely inappropriate. And you can see all the – I mean, the reason we have things like that, have those prohibitions and protections in our Constitution, is because the Founding Fathers knew a couple hundred years ago that this kind of stuff doesn't work. And why do we have to, you know, rehash all this stuff again? It doesn't work. It didn't work then. It doesn't work now.
It still won't. It won't work next week or in the year 2020.
No.
Bill, thank you so much. I know you've got to run, and we are out of time. But thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Shu. Good talking to you.
Always love having you on. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I've finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.